from Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. And of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk over, Zorba, what are they?
Yes, probiotics and blood pressure. We're going to talk a little bit about poop and how changing our poop may actually improve our health. Interesting data, controversy.
Okay.
An eye test for Alzheimer's disease. What's going to happen is this, a real eye test doesn't make a difference, and we're going to discuss it and what it holds for the future for trying to detect Alzheimer's disease in its early stages.
That sounds interesting. What's our recipe?
Ismael's chia smoothie. If you've never tried chia, this recipe may be for you. Tom's mouth is watering. Even when he thinks about chia, he just cannot get a handle on it. He just has to go out and try something with chia. Am I right or am I right?
Well, anyway, we'll talk about it. It's a listener recipe, and Ismael is the listener's son. So that'll be coming up soon. 800-462-7413. It's toll-free. And to the phones we go now, Zorba, as we welcome a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I make my living as a professional speaker, and I've been having a problem for the last 9 to 12-ish months where I cough for no apparent reason. Hmm. I thought it was wheat, gluten. I eliminated those two things from my diet for about a month. Noticed a improvement, but went back to everything while I was on vacation, and it didn't get that much worse. Yesterday, my wife brought me a beautiful glass of fresh-squeezed carrot juice, and right after drinking that, I coughed until I cried. With my profession, I can't afford to be doing this. I've gone to my regular doctor. He suggested an elimination diet, which I have tried. And I know, Zorba, that you have the answer for me.
I'm sure he does. Let me ask, do you drink a lot of water?
I do drink every morning, first thing, big glass of water. I try to repeat that multiple times throughout the day.
Yeah. When you do your speeches, how long are they?
Anywhere from 45 minutes to a couple of hours, typically in the 75-minute range.
Go away. What do you talk about for 45 minutes to an hour or two?
I'm an inspirational speaker with a focus in leadership, engagement, and innovation.
And do you start coughing near the beginning of the speech or after you've done 35, 45 minutes?
When people start falling asleep, it's my technique to wake them up. I wish I knew. It just happens. It's fortunately not happened that often, but one time recently, right as I was about to close, mm-hmm. wrapping up, you know, the most important part of my program, sure. I literally could not finish. I was had tears streaming down my face because of the coughing.
Oh,
that's
so
only happened once, but that was too many times.
So this is a, it's not like a one cough. In other words, it's sort of a series of coughs that seem to be occurring?
I hope I do it in this call, yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, no, even if you don't do it in the call, we can imagine a call. How long have you been doing this, by the way?
Probably close to a year.
With that. Have you coughed before? Do you have allergies, anything of that nature, post-nasal drip, sinus congestion?
As a child, I had multiple food allergies and some pollen.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, okay. I live in Knoxville, one of the worst places to live with mm-hmm. people with allergies, but that's not been a factor recently, and this uh-huh. just came up. And I've lived in Knoxville for about 12 years now.
Yeah. So if anything, you've adjusted to that. Do you eat? When you're speaking, how long before you're speaking? When is your last meal? You know, prior to that, food that you have, do you eat just before you speak?
Typically, I'm a pretty healthy eater. I would mm-hmm. Eat something really healthy if it's a morning session, which is most frequently the case. A lot of times it's just fruit,
uh-huh.
and then I'll eat an energy bar or something right after I'm done.
Okay. Let me tell you a common cause of coughs. A common cause of coughs is acid within the stomach that then migrates up to the point to when you're talking and when you're breathing, at the top of your food tube, if you will, your esophagus, you have a little area which basically where you're breathing for one part and food is going into your stomach. So when we swallow, food goes into our stomach. When we breathe, you know, basically through that same area, it's going into our lungs. Acid can go up there, irritate, and actually cause a cough. and a common cough. So food can actually be a major factor with this, regardless of what the food is. When we put anything in our stomach, we immediately are telling the stomach, hey, produce some acid. The stomach produces then some internal hormones that actually causes something called peristalsis in the small intestine and the large intestine. So the gut starts to move and says, hey, there's going to be food in the stomach, guys, downhill. Make sure you make some space for this food. And so a whole bunch of things are going on. There are a couple of things that I would recommend doing. First of all, I would fast before I spoke. I would have a good meal, maybe the night before. If I'm going to speak early in the morning, if I really want to have something to eat, I would make sure it is at least two hours, but maybe 3 hours prior to eating. In other words, what you want to do is see if food is a factor. And then the second thing you want to do to cut down on that acid before you speak is get over-the-counter Prilosec. They come in 20-milligram tablets. Generic is just as good as the name brand. And I would drop one or two of them on an empty stomach when I woke up in the morning, because that will stop acid from occurring. I think this is probably an acid-related issue. It's much, much more common. And let me give you a perfect example. A number of years ago, I started becoming hoarse. Now, if you have hoarseness and it lasts for a period of time without an explanation, that means you've got to have your vocal cords looked at, because some people have polyps and others have cancer down there. Mm. I'm not a smoker. I don't chew tobacco. Went to my local ENT doc, one of the guys in my clinic. He looked down my cord and he said, you have little polyps there. And I tend to have a chronic cough. And he said, you know, it's either from acid or we've got to remove it. You're not a smoker. I've just read about this acid issue. I stopped coffee. I did that for a number of months. I stopped in the morning. I had this acid reducer Prilosec and the polyps disappeared. So as a professional speaker, it's acid that's the most deleterious thing. And before you speak, you must get up for it and your adrenaline is moving, right?
Absolutely.
So peristalsis is occurring in the gut. Acid is getting ready for any food you're going to take. Don't put anything in the gut and you're going to be better.
How do I get rid of it, or can I?
Well, what I would do if you're bothered, do you drink a lot of coffee?
None.
Okay. So what I would do is one way that a lot of people get rid of it is they take, once again, that Prilosec, 20 to 40 milligrams in the morning for 4 to 6 weeks. And they get the esophagus and the top part of the esophagus to heal. And then I would probably stop taking it completely. However, if the cough occurred when I was doing my public speaking, once again, I would take it before I did my public speaking on an as-needed basis. Hey, let us know how it is. How did you get into this line of work?
Long story, but the short version, my first week of work with the IBM Corporation in Tallahassee, Florida, we had a motivational speaker. I was 21 years old, and I said, that is what I want to do, and started doing it part-time for church groups, civics groups, women's clubs, anybody who'd have me come for free until somebody asked me how much I charged, and a career was born.
Excellent. Can you give us about a minute of inspiration before we let you go? We could use all the motivation that we can get.
Well, one of my favorite quotes is by the famous philosopher Anonymous, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. And I tell people, if you want change in your life, you got to start doing things differently, and little things like what we're talking about here.
Uh-huh.
So you make small changes, and small changes over time turn into big changes, and that's what I'm about, is helping individuals and organizations make big change in their life.
Excellent.
I love it.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you very much. We're going to make change right now. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, what I've always done is the Zorba Pastor on your health show, so I should probably quit doing this.
That's right. You've got to make
some
changes.
More
That's exactly it. Right. You're getting the same old all the time. I loved his voice, though. I was listening to his voice.
Oh, yeah.
And the intonation of his voice. Weren't you?
Yeah.
Aren't you listening to his voice?
Because
you're a radio jock, so you listen to voices all the time.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. It's toll-free. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, my girlfriend last year had a problem with dizziness, and it just came on all of a sudden, and it was quite severe. Couldn't walk, Just was very like a drunken sailor. And so took it down to the emergency room. They ran a whole battery of tests, MRIs, all sorts of stuff. Put her in the hospital for a week. Wanted to check blood pressure, check everything. They were very thorough. really didn't come up with anything. And gradually she got better and better and better, and life went on. Well, recently she just had another, well, not as bad, but it was on a weekend, and it just, like, all of a sudden triggered again, and just stepping off a sidewalk. It was kind of like, kind of felt a little oozy and this and that, and driving in a car, and again, now, eventually now that got better again, but it's just, we just never know when that's going to happen. Any suggestions on what to look for, or any procedures on when this happens and make it better?
Oh, sure. Dizziness is not an uncommon thing. I've had dizziness myself, intermittent labyrinthitis, where all of a sudden I'll try to get out of bed and the world will spin around and spin around and spin around. I have to lay back in bed. I have to do it often once or twice before I can sort of orient myself. Yep. And then I can get up and walk. And I've had it. Sometimes it lasts longer, sometimes shorter. For me, the dizziness occurred with a head injury that I had when I was skiing. Anything that brought this on with your, you know, anything that brought this on that you know of?
Actually, no. And that's funny that you say that, because it was in the morning and she was just going to get up and out of bed, and it just occurred. One thing I will mention is that when we were when she was put in the hospital for a while, the therapist that came in and did some exercise and stuff with her did notice that the eyes would flutter back and forth. That was a real prominent case like that. So that was kind of a situation, and then it just went away, and it apparently the physical therapist does something.
Right, right. Well, what happens is they look for something called nystagmus. And nystagmus is where they put the head down. When you were a kid and you rolled around in a circle to try to see if the world was spinning, it wasn't really the world spinning, but basically it was your eyes going back and forth in this fluttery way called nystagmus. Physical therapists, occupational therapists do it. There's a mover called Epley's Maneuver, and they do that to actually help with the dizziness. Getting back to the issue at hand, dizziness can come and go. And so you have to be prepared for it when it comes. And it often gets better over time. And you noticed it, as you mentioned it with her. She got better. The second bout was not nearly as bad as the first bout. Going to physical therapy and learning how to do the maneuver can be very, very useful, because you can do the maneuver at home. And if you go to our website, zorbapastor.org, I'll give you some information on how to do it. We'll connect it to a YouTube video. We've done that before about that. Over-the-counter antihistamine. Means a pill called Bonine, B-O-N-N-I-N-E, can be very useful too.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Great. Thank you so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's talk about probiotics and blood pressure.
Well, it's an interesting study. It's a tiny study. It's a small study done in Australia. They took roughly 500 people who were, 500 people who took probiotics. Now, first of all, yogurt is a good example of a probiotic, mm-hmm. because yogurt has lactobacillus. And then Activa, which is a name brand of a yogurt that has other probiotics, advertises itself as even better for gut
flora.
What's
lactobacillus?
Lactobacillus is, are the...
Was that lactobacillus, a dumb question?
Oh, Tom, that is such a question. Lactobacillus are basically good bacteria, mm-hmm. that are in yogurt that take the milk product and make it into yogurt. And so when we're eating yogurt, we're eating these bacteria, and they're good bacteria. And what they did was they looked at a number of studies of blood pressure, people who took probiotic, and these were probiotics. I'm not sure if they were in capsules or yogurt for mm-hmm. this, and did not take probiotics. And then they found a very small change, not very much of a change. It was roughly 3.5 millimeters of mercury of systolic and a little over 2 millimeters of mercury for diastolic. Those are very small changes. So instead of, we'll say, 130 over 80, it was like 122 over 78. So if you look at something like this, you say, well, what's this going to do? It's really not.
It sounds frivolous.
Yeah, it sounds frivolous.
Because, I mean, my blood pressure is a little different every time. Everybody's.
It sounds frivolous. Now, if they measured it, which they did the right way, it's a number. Well, it's not frivolous when you look at large populations. In other words, a 2 millimeter drop in blood pressure overall in a large population actually will drop the stroke and heart attack rate, because for some people they'll be below the threshold at which the blood pressure is causing brain damage, heart damage, or kidney damage. In other words, 2 to 4 millimeters for somebody who has high blood pressure is often what we do when we give them an extra pill or a half pill to get their pressure under control.
It can be that small.
Now, for a person who has normal blood pressure, it doesn't mean much. However, what's interesting is that if other studies show this, if probiotics, if taking yogurt, for example, which is a probiotic, lowers your blood pressure, it's another example of how nutrition affects cardiovascular health. In other words, it's another way, another thing we should be thinking about. So we think about fruits and vegetables, 5 a day. It really should be 7 a day of fruits and vegetables. But we don't think about the fact that it may be that we should have a container of yogurt every day, or we should have a probiotic. And once again, 2 to 4 millimeters in a normal person doesn't mean anything. But for somebody who has high blood pressure, it may be meaningful.
Interesting. Now, I have a yogurt every day.
Yeah.
Does that mean I don't need as many vegetables?
No. It does not mean that, Tom. It does not mean that. You still need to eat your veggies every day.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. And Zorba in Eau Claire, Wisconsin joins us now. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, this is about balsamic vinegar. Now, I know that Dr. Pastor cooks, and he uses balsamic vinegar. But my question is this. After you open a bottle, what is the shelf life? And does putting it in the refrigerator compromise its integrity?
Well, vinegar does not have to be refrigerated. I mean, I don't refrigerate vinegar. It doesn't say it on the bottle. So clearly the feds have weighed in on that. So the answer is no. What is the shelf life, you know?
Yeah, after you open it up, because I try to escape the northern climes in the winter, and I'm gone for 6 months.
Where do you go?
Well, I go to a place in Florida.
You don't like winter? I mean, in Wisconsin?
Not anymore. At 83, Zorba.
See,
but anyway, I mean, I don't know. And I don't know what a good balsamic vinegar is. If it's been sitting there forever, should I just dump it?
Well, first of all, the easy way to do it, you're not going to do yourself any harm. So there's no danger in drinking it, you know, in having it. Well, you don't drink vinegar, but there's no danger in doing that. I would take a teaspoon and taste it and see what it tasted like. There's some things that really can last for a long time, certainly a year or two. And vinegar seems to me to be one of those things because we often use it. But the fact is, when I open up balsamic vinegar in my house, it doesn't last 6 months. Yeah. I mean, I open it up and use it. So I don't know what the shelf life is. Maybe Tom knows. Tom.
Oh, yeah,
Tom,
right.
Hey, Tom,
that's funny. I guess
it
is.
Tom knows.
Tom is our resident expert.
She's a regular listener.
Well, I
guess,
some of them are so very dark.
That's exactly it. You know, then there's other vinegars that are, that are put in casks. And then they say, you know, this has been aged for 9 years, you know, in the tundra in Russia, in Siberia. And it traveled thousands of miles to get to your shelf, you know, in somewhere, you know, in northern Wisconsin. And this is the best vinegar. I think I would just use the taste test. I'm sure it's good for a few months.
No,
and Tom is putting his head yes. He knows that it lasts for a long time.
I'm just saying, if you say so, then
Well, I tell you, I think it's great listening to your recipes.
Well, thank you,
Dr. Pastor.
You're
a kick, and that laugh of yours is enough to make anybody laugh.
Thank you very much. You are very kind.
Bye-bye now.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for the call. Hang around. Our recipe is coming up.
And it doesn't have vinegar. It's a non-vinegar recipe.
Okay. Before the break, Zorba, it's time for another edition now of Traveling Tips from Zorba. A listener named Jess from Edmond, Oklahoma writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, when is the earliest it is safe to take an infant on an airplane flight, particularly a long international one? I live overseas and would like to go home to visit my family with my infant daughter, but it is a 24-hour total travel time, including layovers, including one long 10-hour flight. Would 3 months be too early to plan a trip with my baby safely? I love your show. I've listened through the years of the archives. Thanks very much for your help.
Oh, how nice, listening to the archives. Well, first of all, there's no absolute number here, but I think 3 months is sort of early. A lot of things happen in those first 6 months of life. I think 6 months is fine. Mm-hmm. I think 3 months is early because sometimes kids will get infections. Their immune system is really not up to snuff at 3 months. Often children can be quite ill, not have much of a fever, not necessarily even have a change in their white count, and be sick. You're on an airplane. It's 10 hours. You're over the sea. Your child is ill. Now, the next question is 24 hours on various flights.
Yeah.
That's a long time. Now we took our children at about 6 months of age when our kids were born. We went out to visit my cousins in California. Mm-hmm. We did it a couple of times. And I got to share a story. One of the times, it was my daughter, Didi. We gave her some Benadryl, you know, to go to sleep. Well, unfortunately, mm-hmm. the Benadryl doesn't always put them to sleep. It sometimes agitates them and wakes them up. Mm-hmm. And so we dosed her with Benadryl, and before you know it, instead of sleeping, she was moving around. So from a safety point of view, I would say 6 months is fine. And then the other question is, hard to be with that infant for 24 hours, but if you're willing to do it, go for it.
Yeah. The other question is, how old a geezer would it be before you're willing to take that geezer on a trip?
That's right. That's right. Geezer Airlines. There ought to be an airline. You've got to be over 65 in order to actually travel on it.
Before you lift off, make sure to check in with Zorba. Just send your travel questions in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
After our recipe, which is coming up, more of your calls, of course. Another interesting topic to talk over, our medical MythBuster 2, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. If you have a question for Zorba, you'll call 1-800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time, this recipe comes to us from, and we are joined by, Belgrade, Florida listener Catherine Martinez. Catherine, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Now, this is Ismail's Chia Smoothie. Tell us who Ismail is.
Ismail is my stepson, and about a year or so back, you know, we were talking about how I was concerned about how little time I have to eat lunch. You know, I'm an art teacher in public schools in Florida, mm-hmm. and sometimes I only have like 10 or 15 minutes because technically I have a half an hour, but I'm always busy, you know, getting out work and putting away work and helping students that come by during lunchtime. So he recommended this idea, and I have kind of taken it away and adapted it and added my own ideas. But he was the inspiration, so I wanted to give him credit.
Oh,
so it's always good to give credit. So
yeah.
So he said, hey, you're not taking enough time for lunch. I'm going to give you something nutritious. So how did he get into it in the first place? He likes smoothies or?
Yeah, well, he's already doing it. You know, mm-hmm. that's what he does. He's also very busy and so he said, well, why don't you try this? And he gave me some ideas. And, you know, every time we see each other, we bounce each other ideas off. Well, I tried this, and, you know, it didn't work very well. But, oh, no, why don't you do this? And so it's been kind of a nice bonding point for us to talk about when we see each other at family gatherings.
Yeah, you know, you bring up some very, what I think are really interesting points around eating that I think are critically important. First of all, we don't make enough food ourselves. You know, half the dollars spent in America are on prepared foods. I'm in a small town, Oregon, Wisconsin, okay, small town. And we, as of 5 years ago, we had like one stoplight. Now we've got like three stoplights. The town has now grown mm-hmm. to about 6,000 people. And the other day, I was thinking about how many many places in town I can get prepared food for lunch. And that includes going to the local gas station and getting the burgers that sort of taste like my high school burgers. And I counted 26 different spots in my town where I can get food that's prepared for me. Wow. It was kind of shocking, you know, which included the bars in town, the gas stations, the grocery stores, and the restaurants. And that's because we don't prepare our own food. And there's something about preparing your food, but discussing the food with others, like you're doing with Ismail, and trying to come up with something that you enjoy and like and nutritious, I think it is part of a bonding experience. And you brought that up, and that is a key issue here.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, is as a teacher, you know, I've tried to get my students interested in my smoothies, but they're not interested. You know, it's very frustrating. You know, I teach middle school, you know, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, and, you know, if a sports figure doesn't say, drink this, you know, they won't touch it.
Right.
You know, they're eating chips, they're eating sodas.
That's exactly it.
Sugar in it. The administration of the federal government are trying to provide them with healthy opportunities. I look in the garbage, you know, I see apple slices, I see omelets, you know, I see all these foods, things that they should be eating that they're rejecting. You know, they want prepared cereal, they want chips, they want candy, you know, these kinds of things that in the long run, I don't think they're feeding their brains and their bodies the way
you
it
are
be.
Correct. Okay, well, they are not feeding their
well, let's
brains.
Let's do some healthy
yes, okay.
talk here.
Okay, so it's Ismail's chia smoothie. Start out with a small apple, chopped peaches would work, you say pears, kiwi, but apple is what you mostly use. Is that right?
Well, you know, apple has a longer shelf life.
You know,
you could put it in the refrigerator,
right.
It's there for a week, couple weeks, you don't have to worry about it. What I'll do is I'll take the fruit when it's in. Season, you know, like when it's at its point of ripeness, especially like pears and peaches, because they don't last very long. And I'll just chop them up and put it in the freezer.
Excellent idea. Very
you
good.
You know, just at the optimal point of ripeness. Same thing with bananas. You know, you get bananas. Bananas have a long shelf life, but sometimes if you buy a lot at the end of that cycle, they're just at the point of getting brown and mushy. So just chop them up, put them in the freezer. And then when you drop them in your smoothie, it also makes the smoothie kind of cold and you know, it kind of helps that.
Oh, I like that. You know something? When I make this, because I take bananas when they're sort of at the end of their ripeness, and I put them in the freezer to make banana bread, I'm going to take that and just put it in the smoothie. I've never done it when taking it from the freezer and actually put it directly in the smoothie. I kind of leave it on the counter and get it to thaw out. I'm not going to do that again. So, okay. One small apple, half a cup of other fruits, such as fresh or frozen bananas, quarter of a cup of high-fiber cereal or oatmeal, so a high-fiber cereal or oatmeal, and then a quarter of a cup of raw chia seeds. Where do you get your chia seeds?
Well, chia seeds are actually very common now. Any health food store has them in bulk. It's over by the seeds. If you go where they have it, like where the garlic is at, and flaxseed and wheat germ, all that in that kind of area.
Okay. So ask around. Excellent.
So it's very, very common.
Very, very common in different stores. And then 3/4 of a cup of fresh orange juice. Fill the blender with the loosely chopped fruit so the blender is roughly half full. Add the cereal or oatmeal, the chia seeds. Extra cereal or chia seeds will make it thicker, so you can decide if you want it thick or not. Fill the remaining space of the blender with fresh orange juice. Blend until smooth and drink it immediately. But I like your point that if you wait a while, the chia seeds will absorb some of the liquid and make it a bit nuttier. How long do you wait in order to get that nutty flavor?
Yeah, the chia seeds, as I said, give a very interesting texture to it because they never completely, you know, they sort of blend in a little bit, but they always give it like a kind of a crunchy texture, kind of a mouthfeel, you might say. But no, I usually make it in the morning. You know, my schedule is I have to leave for school by about 7, so I make it before 7 in the morning, and then I'm usually drinking it by about 11:30, 12. And I wanted to mention about the chia actually has more fiber than flax.
Oh, I knew it was
For your 2 tablespoons of flaxseed, you've got about 7 grams of fiber for 2 tablespoons. For chia, you have somewhere between 10 and 11 grams of fiber.
Well, we did an analysis of this, and this recipe shows that you get roughly half the fiber you need for the whole day from Ismael's chia smoothie. So thank you so much for sharing this recipe. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are want to get it. And congratulations on working with Ismael on this and continuing to improve it. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to speak with you today.
Yeah, it was nice talking with you, and thank Ismael for us and say hi. For sending us this original recipe, Catherine gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your favorite original and healthy recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org, or you can find us through Facebook. And if you want this recipe, don't forget to come to our website, ZorbaPastor.org, and going through Facebook works. But remember, you can see pictures of Tom if you go to our website, and you'll all be excited to look at those photos.
There's an incentive. 1-800-462-7413. Toll free, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones we go now, Zorba, and a listener with us in Bryan, Texas. Hi.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for Dr. Zorba. I can drive, I can go anywhere, but I can't speak. I forget. And why do I forget? Why do I have a memory loss after so many years of teaching, after so many years of doing important work? This is my vacation from life. I worked and now I retired, but I can't talk. I have been going to doctors from one to another and taking all kinds of medicine, which I do not remember the names. I threw them all away.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I can't speak. I am very, very short on remembering words so that I can have a good conversation.
So first question I have, medicines. If you're on medications, have you had your doc or pharmacist look and see if medications play a role? There are certain drugs, such as drugs for chronic pain, that can interfere with memory, and certain drugs that people take to sleep. So that's my first question. Have you had the medicines that you're on, if you're on any? You said you threw them all away, but are you on blood pressure pills or any other medications?
I am on blood pressure pills. In fact, I went to the doctor yesterday,
okay,
and he increased it. He said to take one pill at night and mm-hmm. one during the day.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So I have that.
Mm-hmm. Why did you throw the other drugs away?
They really bothered me that it was the stomach, and it was like fever. It was like I couldn't see well.
Okay, so the side effects, good reason to throw them away. Have they done an MRI scan of your brain?
No.
Well, you need that. You need to find out whether you've had a stroke. You can have a stroke in certain areas. The Broca areas are parts of the brain that control muscles. And it's possible that you had a small stroke in the area which actually corresponds to your ability to articulate. In other words, your ability to actually engage in speech. Clearly, it's not in certain mental aspects, but it sounds like it's speech. You have trouble getting words out in your brain, or do you have trouble getting words out in terms of your mouth and your ability to articulate it?
My brain. If I want to say something, it comes to me on a foreign language, and then on another foreign language, and I get confused where the English word that I want to say is.
What language do you dream in?
I don't dream. I don't remember ever dreaming during this period.
Uh-huh. A couple of suggestions. Very, very tough. Number one, you need an MRI scan to look at whether or not you've had a stroke. That's very important. Number two, I highly recommend speech therapy. Speech therapy, it's just like stuttering therapy. In other words, people who go to speech therapy and stutter, which we don't really understand, it's not an inherited trait, but it starts with young people, can often get through a whole bunch by learning how to speak. And so you've got, like you said, you've got words that are coming into your mind, and they may be an English word, they may be a Spanish word, or whatever languages you speak. And with speech therapy, you often can learn how to actually concentrate on the right words that are coming into your mind and be able to speak again. Those would be the two things. Did you have a stroke? In which case, you have to get your blood pressure under control, cholesterol under control, and any other risk factors for another stroke. And number two, I would look at speech therapy to be able to do this. Why did it happen? I don't know, but it sounds more like a stroke that really occurred that actually produced this. And we don't have a diagnosis on it. And that's what I would recommend. Speech therapy can be very, very useful for people post-stroke. So you may not get back to your pre-morbid state, as we call it, before you actually had this difficulty, but you might improve where you are right now.
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you so much for your advice. I really feel that I can come out by enjoying my life. Thank you so much.
You are most
Thank
welcome.
Thank you very much. You we welcome. Really do appreciate the call.
Absolutely.
1-800-462-7413.
You know, the issue when something happens to our brain is that whether we've engaged in intellectual pursuits such as, you know, teaching or any kind of pursuit, is once we begin to lose brain function, for instance, with a stroke, and that's what this sounds like, all of a sudden it ruins our quality of life.
Sure,
you know,
of
I
course.
Mean, it ruins our quality of life. So then the next question is, sometimes we don't know where to turn. You know, what do we do, and can we actually improve things? And this is just a good example where you actually can improve things, but you have to work on it and see what it is. And it's a sad story, but it might have a happier ending.
Mm. Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick email question from a listener, Jean, in Wichita, Kansas. She writes, "Dear Doc, I consume a favorite snack of dried kale on a daily basis. I recently was told that eating too much kale could be dangerous since it is a blood thinner. I do not take blood thinner medication nor daily aspirins. My only prescribed medication is for high blood pressure. Should I be concerned with consuming too much kale on a regular daily intake?"
I don't think I'd be concerned at all. Now, if you're on Coumadin, which is a blood thinner that we give, we are careful about what we eat because there's certain drugs that can actually make the Coumadin work better or worse. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if kale is on the list. I suspect it is because the cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower are that. I think if you actually consumed a ton of kale, now I don't literally mean a ton of kale,
but a lot.
Kale for breakfast, kale for lunch, kale for dinner, kale for your midnight snack. Maybe it would thin the blood then, but I don't think there's any reason that you can't consume as much snacking kale as you want to, as long as you like it. Now, kale is Tom's favorite food, right,
Tom? I was
going to
say, should she get a commendation for taking kale every single day?
She should get a commendation because she's eating all that kale. So thank you. Thank you for helping support the kale industry. But yes, eat as much as you want.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba. Post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have an interesting topic to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your questions, of course, for Zorba and our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, this is really interesting. At some time in the future, we may be able to do eye tests to detect early Alzheimer's?
Well, it's an interesting, provocative early study. So first of all, the eye, the retina part of the eye, is actually an extension of the brain from a neurological point of view. So for years, before we had CAT scans, back in the day when I went to medical school, mm-hmm. we would, if we thought somebody's brain was swollen, we'd look in the back of the eye. We still do clinically. And there's something called the optic disc or the optic nerve, and we would look at that to see whether or not it was bulging. And if it was bulging, it meant the brain was actually swelling. And once again, you do this when you don't have CAT scan available. So that part of the brain is what you're looking at, part of the brain, when you're actually doing an eye examination by mm-hmm. an ophthalmologist, a mm-hmm. thorough exam. And what they did was they looked at amyloid. Amyloid is a protein that we know is deposited in the brain, and it's a key part of Alzheimer's disease. And we don't understand exactly why it's deposited or why it happens. We just know amyloid in the brain causes plaques and tangles and causes Alzheimer's, basically, disease to worsen. And this was a study whereby they looked at amyloid by having patients take large doses of a turmeric, which is a spice derivative, which turns out to bind to amyloid. And lo and behold, they could detect whether or not amyloid was in the brain tissue, which is in the back of the eye.
And so that would be an indication?
Maybe. That's exactly what it is. The real question is, we have no way now of determining if somebody has Alzheimer's disease short of actually doing a brain biopsy, which, of course, we don't do. But this is very interesting because it may be a new research study that will show whether or not there's early deposition yeah. of amyloid. And all the Alzheimer's drugs we basically have started to use have failed, probably because we're giving it too late.
That's fascinating. The next question, of course, is who would want to do that?
Well, you may want to do it because if you have early detection, you might be able to actually do something about it. If we look back...
Oh, I thought there was nothing we could do.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. That's the problem with the research that we're doing right now. It may be that we're stepping in and giving medication for Alzheimer's when it's past the point. Perfect example is blood pressure. Back in the 70s, people would say, why should I take a pill for high blood pressure? Because I don't have anything wrong with me now. And now we know, of course, early treatment of high blood pressure prevents strokes, maybe this will lead to some early treatment of Alzheimer's disease.
This is kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Picking up Alzheimer's early may be the key to actually treating Alzheimer's early, and that may be the key that will prevent this devastating disease that is on the rise and especially will continue in the future because the boomers are becoming geezers.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, time again now for our medical MythBuster segment. Today's question comes to us from Anna, who's listening in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. She writes, Dear Doc, I am a healthy 76-year-old female with type 2 diabetes, which is well controlled. I've been told by the diabetes newsletter I receive that one of the best ways to get rid of tummy fat is to put 2 tablespoons of virgin coconut oil in your diet each day. I purchased some from our health food store, but am unsure how to use it. It is the consistency of Crisco.
That sounds disgusting.
I have used it in place of butter when cooking eggs, etc. I don't fry things that often. Your suggestions would be much appreciated.
You know, I find that disgusting. Imagine taking something the consistency of Crisco. And then eating it and thinking it's going to get rid of the tummy fat. Yeah. Nothing gets rid of tummy fat except eating fewer calories and exercising. I mean, let's think about it. 2 tablespoonfuls of oil, extra virgin olive oil. And it's interesting, they're calling it virgin olive oil to get on the, on basically the virgin olive oil bandwagon. Yeah. 2 tablespoonfuls of coconut oil is probably about 150 to 200 calories. Now, let me ask you a question. Do you think, Tom, eating yes. 200 calories of oil is going to get rid of your tummy fat?
Yeah, but it's right there in the diabetes newsletter.
That's right. It must be right. It must be true. It is a myth. The diabetes newsletter this time is wrong.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to weigh in on? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a Griffin, Georgia listener joins in now. Hi.
First of all, thank you for taking my call. My question is, getting on up in years, I eat my, it's about preparation for steaks. Now, I prefer my Pittsburgh medium, and that is, it's burnt both sides, medium in the middle, Pittsburgh medium. My wife eats some Pittsburgh rare.
And are you guys from Pittsburgh? By the way, are you guys from Pittsburgh?
No, no, no. We're not from Pittsburgh. Never been to Pittsburgh, but once just traveling through.
Uh-huh.
It's just, a, you know, you go to some of your restaurants and you ask for it. It's the way they prepare the steak. Where it actually got to work, the name Pittsburgh, I have no idea.
I have any idea either. That's what I, because in Wisconsin, I don't think we use the word Pittsburgh.
I've never heard that called.
Yeah, so it must be, it's obviously a more Eastern thing than it is a Midwest thing. So you eat yours Pittsburgh medium, and she eats hers Pittsburgh rare.
My question is, it's being said it's charred on the outside. Is that, could that be bad for me? And I'm just curious as to whether that was probably possibly bad for me. Everyone I've ever introduced the steak to have it prepared this way has changed over to it.
Well, I can see why. I happen to like charred steaks myself, but I've never put it. In fact, my wife, when I make steak, I love to cook. She loves my food. Steak is the one thing that she is incredibly picky about and is the only thing that has caused arguments in our house in the last 39 years. I've been over steak and how to prepare it. I have tried to learn how to make a really good steak, discovered the grill is important, and charring means I've got to heat it up for like 30 minutes to get it super hot. Put it on there so that it's charred on the outside, and she likes it sort of really rare on the inside, and I finally have succeeded in figuring out how to do it. But let's get to what the downsides. First of all, when you char meat on the outside, you're getting rid of any E. coli that can be on meat. Let's look at E. coli as a poisoning, because it is. It's a, you know, you can be not poisoned, but you can get sick from E. coli. But when you look at a steak, for instance, the only E. coli that can be on a steak is on the outside of the steak. It's not in the steak. And so when we look at E. coli food poisoning, it comes generally from hamburgers because it's mixed in with a bunch of other burgers and it's within the whole product. So when we look at burgers, they always say, well, heat burgers so there's no red on the inside. Why you want to kill the E. coli? So from a steak point of view, when you're charring it, there are no E. coli on the outside. The chances that you're going to have E. coli are about as close to zero as you can have. That's number one. Now let's look at the nitrosamines that are caused by charring. There is a theoretical tiny risk that nitrosamines might cause cancer. When I say theoretical and tiny, in other words, infinitesimally small. And so every time around June, July, and August during barbecue season, people bring up the fact that nitrosamines are bad for you, often ignoring other things that might be bad for you, like driving your car when it's raining outside and it's dusk.
Yeah.
That happens to be bad for you. Good chance of death in a car. Better chance of death in a car driving it when it's raining in the dusk or when the temperature is 32 degrees and you're driving it and it might be ice slick. So you got to look at other risks. Your risk of getting cancer for that is incredibly small. So let me ask you some other things. Do you smoke cigarettes?
Yes.
Well, come on. Give me a break. You're worried about the risk of death from a charred steak and you're smoking cigarettes. It's the tobacco, baby. It's not the charred steak. So let's go back to the steak. Don't worry about the steak. And when you're cooking it on the, if you're cooking on the grill or you're in the restaurant, just make sure you don't smoke a cigarette before the restaurant and after the restaurant. And that will keep you healthy.
All right.
Take care now.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. Before we head out today, it's time for another riveting round of Rapid Fire, where Zorba quickly tackles listener questions and comments from our inbox and Facebook page. Zorba, are you ready?
I'm standing up straight. I've got my thinking cap on. I've had my cup of coffee, pen in hand. I am ready as soon as you are, Tom.
Actually, sitting down. First up, Karen in Oshkosh, Wisconsin asks, on a recent show, you advised a young parent that babies should have nothing but formula or breast milk for the first 6 months of life. Why bring formula into the picture? Isn't breast milk the best?
Always. Breast is best. That's the slogan forever when it comes to kids.
Next up is Marilyn, who has an oil-related question. Zorba, I was surprised to hear you recommended canola oil. I've heard that it is not a good oil because it is manufactured oil. Could you comment more on it?
Canola oil is good oil. Olive oil is better, but canola oil is an excellent oil. Produced in Canada, by the way, and it is processed. Of course, olive oil is processed too, but it is an excellent oil. I highly recommend it.
Now on to Mary from Amherst, New York, who asks, Dear Zorba, I just read your article about protein shakes. You said that soy doesn't have all of the amino acids to make it a complete protein. I've always heard that soy is one of the few plant sources of complete protein. Are you sure?
I think soy is an excellent source of protein. Animal proteins are often thought of, such as albumin in an egg, as having complete protein. Soy is about as close as you can get from a vegetable source.
Now some words of kindness from Juanita, who posted the following comment to our Facebook page about a caller who was struggling with substance addiction. She writes, Today's show was one of the best shows I've heard. Dr. Zorba and Tom, you were perfect. I'm sending a sincere wish for the success of the young man with the alcohol problem. And I very much hope he calls back with good news in 6 months.
How nice. Thank you.
It is nice. And finally, here are some closing thoughts on almonds from a listener, Greg, in Bozeman, Montana. He writes, In California, they say almond when the nut is on the tree, but they are called almonds if they're off the tree. This is because almonds are harvested by shaking the tree, and they shake the L out of them.
That's very good. That's very good. And you know what? We can say that on public radio and not get bleeped.
If you have a healthy living question for the good doctor, just post it to our Facebook page or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org, or don't forget, we are on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0830Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.